Carlo, you know, the Maple Leafs record-wise off to a good start, 3-1, position you played a lot. What do you make of their revamped blue line?
I mean, it's still a work in progress for me. I think four games is still a little premature to give a true evaluation of where this team stands with their blue line, especially with no preseason. But you got to be happy with the results of the team, you know, being 3-1 after four games. I think, you know, where Maple Leaf fans could be, you know, overly pleased is their this Leafs commitment to playing a better version of team defense. And when you play a better version of team defense, your defense core as a unit is going to look a lot better. And especially over their last two games, you know, for a guy that's watched the Maple Leafs for a couple of years now since I've retired, it's probably been the most consistent style of play out of this group over this stretch of, you know, two games in six periods. So I think that's, you know, very encouraging so far. But again, let me reiterate, it's still early in the season. I think what, you know, what has been the criticism of this team is their immaturity level and their inability to be consistent. So as long as they continue to show glimpses of continuing to be comfortable in close games, I think, you know, we should be in for more games like we've seen over the last stretch here than what we're used to seeing in this team in the past, where they just they crumble when they get goal scores on.
When you look at the matchups tonight, will it be Tavares or Matthews' line mainly up against McDavid?
From what I heard, I believe just, you know, from listening to the comments coming out of pregame skate was that Matthews was going to get the matchup with McDavid. And I tell you what, man, that's what I'm most excited to see. Best on best. Let the guys play at it. You just came in, well, before you introduced me, you talked about the struggles that the Edmonton Oilers are facing, and maybe this could be the sort of recipe for them to get onto the road. You know, a poor start at home, being 1-3 with that type of star power, Draisaitl still with no goals. You know, I can't even imagine what the conversation right now is in Edmonton coming off a game where that power play went 0-7. So there's probably going to be some sparks lit under those guys. I know McDavid always loves coming home to play in Toronto, you know, be it that there be no fans in the stands. But I think this is a matchup that both of those players should be excited about, both of those lines should be excited about, and fans watching should be excited to watch.
Has John Tavares been the best Leaf early this season?
I think he's made a case of it, for sure. He's looked a lot faster. Looked like a different player with the puck. I don't know if the extended offseason just helped him recover from whatever he was dealing with last year. I know he broke his hand last year early on in the season, and who knows how much that affected maybe his stick handling or some of his puck decisions later on in the season. But I think he'll be the first to admit that he feels like a different player out there. He definitely looks like he's a different player. But you know, leading the team in scoring, as much as that top line of Matthews, Marner, and Thornton have looked really good when they've been on the ice together, because they've generated a lot of ozone time. Up until last game, they weren't really, you know, contributing on, in the production for the team. So to have that that depth and that confidence in your second line, led by John Tavares, who again is playing on the second power play unit as well. That's probably something that's motivating him, or eating him up inside, knowing that, you know, he wants to be the guy being out there in those situations, and he'll always be the guy, you know, when push comes to shove. But I think Sheldon Keefe's done a good job right now spreading out the talent on this group and creating more of a difficult matchups for the teams that they play against. And I think John Tavares has really benefited from that. Like, now, you know, Tavares was the guy getting the hard matchups last year. Now Matthews is taking that role. So this opens up more opportunity for him. So, for the first four games, I think it's safe to say he's been the best.
Carlo Koliakou joins us on Edmonton Sports Hitter TSN 1260. You look at their blue line, and, you know, Riley's with Brody. You played the position a lot. You know, some guys can find chemistry right away. Others, it takes a while. But, you know, maybe is Justin Hall better than he gets credit for? Like, maybe he's the defense in their top four that no one talks about, but, you know, he's the only Maple Leaf currently who's above 50% goals for, goals against, 5-on-5.
I think he absolutely is better than what people give him credit for. And, even when Mike Babcock was the coach here and he basically had him as the extra guy that would bag skate every day, wouldn't put him into the games. The talent that I saw him play in the games that he played, and especially in the preseason games that he played, I always believed there was something there. He just needed the confidence in somebody believing he could do it. And what better guy to help him, see that opportunity than a guy that he had success with in the minors, with Sheldon Keefe. I think Sheldon Keefe knows what he can get out of him because he's seen him play in big minutes and in big games and in their Calder Cup run. And now he's seeing him, play that out here in the NHL level. And I think the reason why he's better than what most people think is because he doesn't do anything in particular that stands out. He just does a lot of good things at a very steady pace. Makes a good solid pass, makes a good heads-up play, doesn't take too much risk. Is a good support guy for his D partner, plays a physical game, is a big body with a good stick. Those are great intangibles for a defenseman that, the more you play and the more confidence you get from your coach, the more confidence you're going to play with. And I think that's why Justin Hall has been able to take that next step here with this group, which started last year. And I think it's done a good job carrying over to this year with that second pairing right now where he slotted in with Jake Muzzin, who, again, last year when they were paired together before Muzzin got hurt, gave the Maple Leafs something they didn't have all year, which was somewhat of a comfort having a shutdown pair with those two guys that would just go out there and play defense and, make the high and hard play off the glass, clear the front of the net, make the easy 2-foot pass instead of the 10-foot home run pass. And that's why I think those two guys complement each other well.
Speaking of Mike Babcock, he broke his silence. He said the Marner story didn't happen the way it originally was said, even though he admitted it the first time, but said, well, I didn't know that was a story that came out. Yeah. A, do you believe that? And B, do you think Babcock gets another opportunity when, you hear about a lot of the, different stories about how he approaches players?
I do think he gets another opportunity, but I don't think it's anytime soon. I mean, here's a guy who clearly said that he's been enjoying the other things in life right now, and he has the security to do it. At least they're still paying him until 2023. So it gives you some time to reflect. I think with Mike Babcock, maybe a lot of the things that he's hearing about who he was and the way he coached coming out right now is he's hearing it because he's actually on the outside listening to the noise. When you're involved in the game as much as he was with, how much attention he pays to being a coach and to strategizing and to scouting and coaching and all these other international teams that he has. Sometimes you just don't spend much time thinking about what other people are saying about you. And now, because it was the first time in his career where he was actually fired, at an NHL level, it gave him time to reflect. It gave him time to reflect about his job, who he was, things that he said, people that he probably impacted. And he probably realized the mistakes that he made. And, good on him for actually coming out and addressing it because, in most cases when people are outside the game, they probably don't feel the need to address things that people are saying about them. But here's a guy who, loves the game of hockey, is probably going to find himself back into the game at some point in his career. He did state that he's going to probably wait for the right fit to do so. And he's also a guy, too, that, according to rumors, is going to join, NBC and do some panel stuff and really get to evaluate the game sitting in a different seat than the normal coaching seat that he's used to. And playing for Mike Babcock, I'll tell you firsthand, as a player, if he's not one of the guys that he likes or that he trusts, he doesn't necessarily give you the attention that you probably think you deserve. And that rubs guys the wrong way. It always has, and it probably always will. That's not just with him. That's with every coach that guys have played for. It's just you've heard more instances with him because of, some of the guys that are coming out and saying it and the players that it has, had an effect on. So I'll always believe, and even though I had my run-ins with Mike Babcock, still to this day, I still give him the credit for being one of the best coaches that I've ever played for. But there was things that bothered me about, the person that he was too. I didn't let it affect me, and it didn't harm me in the way that it's harmed other people. But I still have the ultimate respect for him for the job that he did as a coach.
Do you believe teams are going to be more patient with coach firings because of the pandemic and the cost of having to bring in another coach this year?
I honestly don't. And Jason, here's my reason for that. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves, and it involves the cap. Why I dislike the cap so much is because it just seems like hockey has trended into a direction where people that don't know enough about the game hear too much about the cap, the cap. It's like every time you want to make a move, it's do they have enough cap space, or can they make it fit in the cap, or you know, who on the other team do they have to bring back because of cap bump? You don't hear anything about that in other leagues, which is bothersome, because the reason why I don't believe the coaches, you'll see a change in coaches, because I think when teams don't get off to the right starts that they hope to start the season, instead of going out and trying to make a big trade and changing something in the locker room that could either give a spark to the culture or light a fire under a player, it's difficult because of the cap situations these teams put themselves in going into the season, where they don't give themselves much wiggle room. And then maybe the player they want to trade can't fit into another team's cap scenario. So ultimately, what are these codes, what are these GMs resort to? Well, if I can't trade any players, let's see if me firing the coach is going to allow or create a spark that I'm looking to see out of this team. And until the cap changes, it's a flat cap for at least this year and maybe next year and the year after, I can't see that problem being fixed. I mean, look at the difficulty right now and the players that have come out publicly and have asked for trades. They're still playing on the same teams yeah. that they're on. So that's something that really bothers me about the game of hockey. You know, you look at the buzz and excitement that's created around the league, the NBA and the NFL. When a player wants out, he gets traded, and it creates buzz around the fan base and teams that are people that follow the sport. I just don't think hockey has enough of that, in which, you know, I hope one day we can find a better way to be more flexible with it, so that coaches aren't the ones paying the ultimate price at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting angle. I hadn't really thought of it that way. You're bang on. I also think, you know, the other one, I think the NHL could help themselves in many ways. Number one, I would limit contracts to 5 years like the NBA has. Now, and a lot of those superstars sign one or two. But now, because the Players Association, this benefits them. The best players are still going to get their money. And in fact, if the salary cap goes up every year, you know, those 8-year deals, for the last 3 years, in some cases, a guy's a real bargain. Nathan MacKinnon, Brad Marchand, right? Like those guys would be getting paid 3 years earlier. But more importantly, it stops teams from making the idiotic decision year after year after year in free agency and signing 28, 29, 30-year-olds to 6-year contracts, 7-year contracts. And after 2 years, it's just wasted money. And so the guys who are good can't really get any money. And you're right, you can't trade anyone because the cap, like the teams screw themselves.
And Jason, again, this goes back to the cap, because the reason why you run into those problems is because teams and the general managers try to find a number that works so that they can be flexible within the cap, but also want to please the player in the dollar amount that they're looking for, right? Where at the end of the day, there should be some flexibility within the cap, where that if a 5-year deal, if a guy's worth $7 million a year, just give him the $7 million a year, and you won't have to worry about how it affects your cap. Because you can have some flexibility, whatever it may be, you know, whether it's a tax that you pay or, you know, a player movement that you have to, you know, make a decision with that doesn't have to go through waivers. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff at a wall here and seeing what sticks. Ultimately, I would love if the NHL could create some sort of soft cap system with a luxury tax where you're paying 50 cents on a dollar that's capped at $5 million. And basically, you can spend an extra $5 million if you want, but it's going to cost you $2.5 million to do so tax-wise. And where does that money go? That money goes right back into the system, into the owner's pocket. So I don't see why. I mean, does adding an extra $5 million really create a greater competitive advantage for the team that does it? I don't, because the players that play hockey nowadays, what's the difference between the really great ones and the average guys? It's really not that much when you really think about it, is it? I mean, hockey's the most team game that exists in all sports.
Totally.
I mean, teams play better without their star players in the lineup in most cases. So there's so many things that the NHL could do, or at least could explore, to help grow the game in a better way that would also help eliminate them getting stuck with these bad contracts year after year. And that's my biggest pet peeve too. Like, we saw just recently before the season started, there was a couple of teams that handed out six-year deals to guys that haven't even played more than 60 games in the NHL. And then you wonder why they the teams run into their cap problems every year. It's like you still don't know what a player is before he plays 100 or 150 games. And if he goes out in those 100, 150 games and shows you that he's a consistent player that can give you what you look to get out of him every game, then pay him. You know what I mean? Then you don't have to worry about being locked into a six-year deal. Like, how much do you think Buffalo right now is regretting that Jeff Skinner deal?
Oh, dude, I said that from day one. I predicted that 2 weeks. I said, this will be the worst signing ever. Like, the guy is a complimentary winger. Oh,
yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. I mean, good on him for getting it. I'll always compliment the players for getting the contracts that they get, but it's the GMs and the owners that continue to create this bigger problem that exists. And it sucks because, you know, and here's a perfect example. The Edmonton Oilers are playing the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. The Edmonton Oilers, with the two best players in the world playing on that team, couldn't go out and get a goalie this summer because they were stuck at the cap. How stupid is that? You know?
Carlo, I love it, man. I love it. We'll have to get, well, the Leafs and Oilers are playing all the time, so we'll get you back on. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll see what happens.
Hey, anytime, Jason. I appreciate you having me on. And listen, I'm a big McDavid fan. Obviously, I follow the Leafs, but I hope that we can find a playoff series between Edmonton and Toronto. Oh, that would be must-see TV.
That would be unreal. That Drysdale guy is pretty good, too. So that would be Matthews.
Sure,
there'd be there could be lots of talk about it. It'd be awesome. So and Oilers fans would like it because it means their team's in the playoffs. So
Exactly. And that's all you can ask for at this time. And listen, the Canadian division, I've said, I'm not calling it the North Division. To me, it's the Canadian division.
Totally.
So that's the right way it should be branded. It's one of the toughest divisions in hockey because you have six legitimate playoff teams in there, which is going to make it even more interesting for the year.
Love it, Carlo. Thanks for your time.
All right, Jason. Anytime, buddy. Take care. Enjoy the game.